Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are we're positively almost into our third year of Baltimore Positive broadcast. Don Mohler, of course, my high school guidance counselor from August of 1982. Mohler, I'm going to have you know that while we open up these segments here and do things a little differently, I've shown them to everyone else. You think I don't like baseball anymore. And what I have here, I've been going through all my baseball tickets. These are tickets from my lifetime. And I found some after your heart, some from the 1970s and early 1980s. I don't have one from the summer of 82, I don't think, from the summer when we met. If I have one, I got 83, I got 75. Look at this, Kansas City Royals from back in 1980. Do you remember these, right?
Absolutely remember them.
Baseball
sure.
Season. How about that, right?
There you go.
Well, I'm bringing up memories here and talking about things and said, you know what? I need to have Mohler on. Not when we're talking to the governor or the mayor or the county executive or very important people that are much smarter than I am, right? I said, we need to have Don on. Every Monday, get together and sort of clean up the weekend, look ahead to the week a little bit. You know, Dan Rogers used to do a thing called gripe session. Remember that? Gripe session. I don't want to gripe, but I do want to have a forum to get some things off my chest. Is that all right?
I think that works. And, I think it's always helpful at the end of a week to look back and look forward. I said, I don't know if the segment's called In the Rearview Mirror or Putting It in Drive, but I do think there is, there is something to be said from taking a moment and trying to figure out what is going on in the nation. And it's in the nation, it's in the state, it's politics, it's sports. I said to you earlier today, your good friend and someone that I've enjoyed interviewing, I can't wait to get John Feinstein back on because of the piece that he just wrote in the Washington Post that I'm sure is going to get, I haven't looked at the comments yet, it's going to get all kinds of reaction where he, I think in a very thoughtful way, Nestor, suggests that playing the national anthem before sporting events has really outlived its usefulness, was never meant to be what it is, and I guess it all came to the forefront because during the pandemic, Mark Cuban, who makes it a point to stand and put his hand over his heart, as Feinstein writes about, just made it a point not to do it during the pandemic, and obviously now has been directed by the league to do it. But I think those kinds of pieces, it's the kind of thing we like to talk about, right? And I don't know, I tweeted at John. I said, I don't know that I had thought about it in the way that he did.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, we were all indoctrinated, and anything that gives me a chance to mention Mr. Dausch, George P. Dausch III, GPD3, that he would do the morning announcements every day, and I was part of the morning announcements team at Dundalk High, and we would do the Pledge of Allegiance, right? So right off the bat, every American child's indoctrinated into, saying the pledge every single morning. So I don't know that it's any different than that. Right or wrong is to be argued by people greater than I. I know in the sports vernacular, Don, it's become a bit of a cash grab with let's run the airplanes through and have the flyovers, which become the highlight of the thing, and showing our military might and all of that. I don't know where it's not necessary. It really isn't. And I don't feel like it's mandatory either, that I don't feel like it needs to be a part of a sporting event or quite frankly, the morning announcements. What do they say? Patriotism is, what you are, not what you're showing on the outside. I mean, it's something that I think has changed in my lifetime. When I think back to, 1970s and 80s and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance and how that might not have been as controversial then as it is now. But I think the flag is controversial now in the way Donald Trump has sort of humped it a little bit over the last 5 years.
Well, and to me, Nestor, and I think what John was getting to is that because of what you suggest, it's now about something else. And we lose sight of the patriotism. I thought it was really interesting in his article when he said the one place that he's adamant that it should continue to be played is before the Army-Navy game. Now, of course, he has a special connection to those institutions. He has a special connection to the Naval Academy. But he said to him that symbolized something bigger, excuse me, than just the game, and was confident that we should continue to play it there. The other point that he makes, and I think this gets to what you're trying to get your hands around, and that is, we seem to have gotten to this place on so many issues in the country that we feel a need to impose our beliefs and our feelings on others, on our neighbor, on the person down.
And what
the
is that based on? Is that based on majority? Is that, you know, who? At what point does it just become the rule that at a sporting event you have to do it? Right? Like, I you know, things that have become normal get rethought all the time, right? I mean, you know, we talk about the beginning of the show, we're 30 years into this, to think that same-sex couples could be married. I mean, all of these things that have happened during the course that we've moved society forward in so many ways, you know, then you look sideways and say something like this is going on with the national anthem that's really dividing people, right? I mean, like, the Ravens and the knee, nothing changed the Ravens more. Certainly changed my life more in regard to Baltimore Positive and even doing this, was seeing the national anthem, the knee, and the fact that it happened in London for a lot of people. That really was a tectonic change, I think, for the Ravens in where they were, where they are, and where they need to be, and where the league needs to be.
Well, it's interesting, Nestor, because you and I have talked about that a lot, and we've talked with Dick Cass about it. We've talked with Kevin Byrne about it. As things evolve, what's gotten lost in the shuffle? And this is where John brought it all back to me with his article, is that people forget. They have short memories, and unless you remind them, until the president was starting to struggle a little bit in the polls, the kneeling at NFL games had become pretty non-existent. It was a player here, it was a player there, and then the president and his advisors, Stephen Miller and others, but primarily Miller and that crowd of authoritarians who surrounded him, they decided, boy, we can push some buttons here and really get to the core of the base. And that's when he screamed, "You're fired and your sons of bitches," and all that stuff that he used to do.
Pence walked out of a game in his own state, walked out of an NFL game as a sitting vice president of the United States,
right,
to make some point. I'm not sure what, other than being an
animal,
you know.
Well, I think the point, and I think that's part of, you know, it's all connected, isn't it? Isn't that the thing, as we talk to the folks out there? And again, we appreciate all of you who listen to Baltimore Positive. You can find it on the website at baltimorepositive.com. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You just type in Baltimore Positive and boom, it comes up. So we appreciate all of you who participate on this journey with us. But it's all so connected, because it seems to me that the past few months and where we head now is a real challenge as to whether we can actually move beyond this tribalism, Nestor. And that's the word. I think that's the right word. It's certainly the word that national political philosophers are writing about and pundits are writing about. We've become so tribal. I've written about it myself, that as long as you hate, as long as you think I hate who you hate, then we're all good. I mean, there was no better example of what happened recently, you know, in the impeachment trial of the former president. I mean, it was the most significant amount of votes that any Senate has ever voted to convict someone by 57, seven members of the other party, never happened before in American history. Yet there were 43 senators who, even though they were the subjects of the crime, they were the victims of the crime, they were the witnesses to the crime, they knew what happened, and it didn't happen just on January the 6th. It happened for months, going back to late spring and summer, when the president saw the polls, and he said, I think I'm going to lose. Pretty clear I'm going to lose here. The polls can't all be wrong again. And that's when he switched the narrative, and the narrative became, it's not going to be fair. They're going to cheat us. We can't let that happen. And in the hyper-partisan world in which we live, that caught on. And even as recently as the trial, 43 senators were afraid to stand up and say, yeah, of course, Donald Trump did this. And, you know, Nestor, and I know you're chomping to jump back in, I thought that, John Heilman, and if you like politics at all and you like, trying to analyze what's happened, if you're not watching the circus on Showtime, it's literally one of the best half hours on TV every week. And Heilman, I think, put it best one day when he said, this is simply the but-for question. And it answers everything, as he said. If you say to someone, had Donald Trump not behaved the way he did in the months leading up to the election and then after, had Donald Trump come out like every normal American president had done prior to him and said, we ran a good race, we left it all out on the field, now we've got to go forward together as a nation, I wish President Biden and Vice President Harris the best, because that's what we do here in America. Had he done that, does January 6th happen? And as Heilman points out, of course it doesn't. So that's all of the evidence that you need. But because those 43 senators are terrified of their constituency, and that's, people don't understand how small it is. It's a significant part of the Republican Party, but the Republican Party is a significant part of the voting electorate in the United States of America, and that base is even smaller, but big enough, they believe, still, to primary them. And look at what's happened, Nestor, since then. Immediately, you go down to Richard Burr in North Carolina, the ink wasn't even dry. And that Republican Party ran to censure him. So these local Republican parties in these, particularly in these red states, although
censuring for truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are we going to get anywhere as a society when truth and facts and evidence went, I mean, I was appalled last year when the Senate said evidence, we don't want any evidence. Evidence, nah, no evidence for us. The notion that the founding fathers, Don, would ever know the power of this device and what it could do, the power of Russia, China, anyone, Dr. Evil, to infiltrate information, mind crimes, facts, deep state, all of these crazy QAnon beliefs. But more than that, that there would be senators so wealthy in their own right to be sitting in Washington, D.C. and to be voting their interest after being involved, in the case of Hawley and Cruz, literally being involved in the crime, to be egging on the crime and the crimes that were committed, including a murder of a police officer, no less. And all the video, the entitlement to believe. Don, can you imagine what kind of batshit juice we'd have to be drinking for me to call you and say, Don, there's a thing going on down at the Capitol. Get your flak jacket, get your AR-15. We're going to go down and we're going to penetrate the Capitol and we're going to stop an election. Whether you believe that it's fair or not, that this was a plan. You know, the people were, let's get together and go down and storm the Capitol and then get in the Capitol and turn your phone on and videotape yourself as though it's not a crime. And more than that, to be of the mindset that not only is it not a crime, that your side is actually going to win, you're actually really going to hang and kill Nancy Pelosi and Mike Pence on and on and on, and that the militia is not going to not only show up, but when they show up, they're going to be on your side, and that you're not going to go to jail and not be able to take your Mexico trip next month. I mean, Don, can you imagine me calling you and saying, let's get together and go down to D.C. and participate in some way in this?
Well,
and think that you're not going to go to jail forever? I mean,
well, of course, it's amazing.
These people weren't shot. I mean, watching the trial again the other day, my wife got up Monday morning and she turned the news off. And she's like, I am not watching that police officer's head lodged in the door one more time in the aftermath of the person who made it all happen being held accountable for it. And
well, Nestor, take that. That's a great jumping. Boy, there's so much in what you just said. To take that scene, the entire country has seen that scene ad nauseum. And I agree with Jen, your wife, that it's an awful scene to watch. But again, that scene really signifies the challenge of where we are. Because purportedly, these folks are the supporters of quote unquote Blue Lives Matter, police rights, law enforcement Bill of Rights, all across the country. And this was a day when a police officer was killed, five others hurt, two others commit suicide. And they were okay with that because their fearless leader said it was okay. Now, you mentioned two folks, and I'm going to add one to the list. You mentioned Cruz and Hawley, and I'll add Mike Lee. Now, think about it, Nestor, when you
say Tuberville. Don't forget the coach, the ball coach.
Yeah, well, Tuberville is too stupid to even talk about. But when you talk about, because Lee, here's what's scary. Lee, Tuberville's stupid. Lee, Hawley, Cruz are anything but. They're anything but stupid. They have made another calculation, and it's fascinating. When you say you scratch your head, you think about it. The jurors in a trial, which they were meeting regularly during the trial with the defense attorneys to help the defense attorneys with strategy. Now, that's the kind of thing, Nestor.
The founders did not ever... I mean, seriously, the founders would not have been okay with that. Nor should the people of the United States shouldn't be okay with that.
And as our friend Jamie Raskin, by the way, you know, a million salutes to our good friend and Baltimore Positive alum, and Jamie will be back with
superstar.
Us soon. He'll be back soon. Yeah, a true superstar. And given what he's been through on a personal level, I don't know how many times he moved me to tears during the trial, but it was more than once. But as Jamie pointed out, as Congressman Raskin pointed out, the whole argument, and we'll get to Mitch in a minute, not accepting the articles of impeachment or allowing them to be brought over by the House manager.
Well, they just make up rules.
Well, of course,
it was kind of like playing wiffle ball in Rob DeBilius's backyard. You would just make up a rule. You know,
and Nancy
literally.
The speaker called BS on it. Good for her. But as Jamie pointed out, listen, I had my grandchildren around for the weekend. They understand. One of them is 9 years old. They understand the following point. If you're going to suggest that you may only impeach a president while he's literally residing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue before he's left office, that means in the last few weeks of his presidency or her presidency, hopefully moving forward as we eventually get a female president once in the not too distant future. That means that Mr. or Madam President can do anything they want. As I said to my wife, just think about what Jamie was pointing out. That means that in the last week or so, the president could say to the Russians, he could say to the North Koreans, hey, by the way, I've just soured on the United States of America and this whole idea of democracy. And here are all the nuclear codes. Here's all of the intelligence that I gathered over the past 4 years. Mr. Putin, I want you to have it. Now, what I would say to any of our Trumpites who are
in exchange for two Trump towers in Moscow.
Exchange for a couple of Trump towers. Does anyone in our listening off audience believe that? I think Jamie called it the January exception. Evidently, the founders had a January exception. You can be impeached except for the month of January. In the final,
the notion that you can't be held accountable, that you've been voted into a position of no accountability, is
batshit
opposite everything this country was ever founded on, built on, that our forefathers fought in wars. You know, my father-in-law fought in Vietnam, my grandfather fought in Europe, and I mean, just on and on, right? Like,
well, it fails the smell test, Nestor, which brings us back. We know, and they know. What's that old thing? I know that you know that I know what I know. You know, we know that Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Josh Hawley, all know that that's insane. These guys are constitutional scholars. Ted Cruz has argued cases in front of the Supreme Court. Josh Hawley clerked for Antonin Scalia. These guys aren't idiots. Here's their calculation. And Nestor, this is going
that Trump
to be,
moved the bar on batshit so far they can do whatever they want.
Well, I don't know that that's the calculation. That may be part of it. I think they've made another calculation, which is this, and you and I and our listeners will watch this over the next 4 years. I think they have concluded for some reason that the Trump base is alive and well. And that with someone just a little smarter than he is, because he's not very smart. Again, folks, you don't get angry at me. We're talking about a man who's bragged openly that he's never read a book. So it's not Don that's saying that. It's the former president himself who brags that he never read a book. So Trump's not very smart. Never very smart. Never very organized. Never very strategic. Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Josh Hawley, smart and strategic. They're betting that that base can be revved up again, that nationalistic fervor can be revved up again, cranked up again, enough to actually carry out, and this is the terrifying part, the Trump vision of this autocratic America, and that it just needs a better leader, and that leader is them. Now, here's where I am. The optimistic part of me, as folks know, the Nelly Forbush, cockeyed optimist part of me.
I'll hold the Orioles tickets up again if anybody wants to see this part of you.
Says they are wrong, and that if they go down that road, they will continue to lose the suburbs of Philadelphia, the suburbs outside of Pittsburgh, the suburbs in Arizona, the suburbs in Atlanta, and they cannot win elections if they're going to shrink that base to that point. And I think, Nestor, here's why I have.
Well, I mean, it's very easy for me to say I don't vote with Nazis. It's just very, very easy for me to say that's not the team I'm on. I saw that team on January 6th, and that's not my team. And that could never be my team because that's not what I'm about.
And here's the encouraging part of that, Nestor. And again, folks who have listened to us have heard me use this stat again ad nauseum, and I will continue to use it because I think it's telling about where we've been and where we are and where we're heading. I always point out that at the end of the Joseph McCarthy era, when McCarthy was disgraced and run out of town, and I can hear people in their cars now finishing this line, 34% of the American people still supported Joe McCarthy and his effort to blackball and ruin the lives of people with a lie that the State Department and members of the United States government were overrun by communists. Now, he had been totally discredited. He had been totally embarrassed. He had been exposed as a drunk and was leaving town with his tail between his legs, and 34% of the American public still supported him. Now, here's what I see happening right now, and we're early. We're early in the Biden presidency. I recognize that, and the press should be as hard on Joe. You and I have talked about that. I came out
Jen
the other
Psaki
night.
As well, by the way.
I came out the other night and jumped on President Biden when he didn't fire the deputy press secretary immediately for making those misogynistic comments to the female reporter. He said, obviously, the person then did resign within 24 hours. But we got to hold them to the same standard. But right now, roughly 1 month in to the Biden presidency, the approval ratings are back to what you would expect for a new president on a honeymoon, which is what we typically got before Donald Trump. He turned everything upside down. Down is up, up is down. And if you look at an aggregate of the polls in Real Clear Politics or wherever you look, the disapproval numbers of Joe Biden are running on a daily basis anywhere from 35 to 36 to maybe 40. So it's that McCarthy 34% that's always been there. Now, we appear to be drifting back to that as Biden's approval numbers are anywhere from, you know, low 50s, 53, 54.
But, Don, some it's also a factor of all the Lincoln Project people and the people that you're still friends with who maybe one time went for this 4 years ago, but this time around understand Biden needed to win and we needed to put an end to that, that there are a lot of middle, and we always talk about how big the middle is, right? There are middle Republicans that are much more Biden than Trump, and if that's the way it's going to roll and we're going to become a Nazi party, it's been an embrace of that, that there are plenty of people who will go independent middle. This notion there's going to be a third party, I can't even take that up. I'm not smart enough to take that up, but I find it very hard to believe. But, you know, I mean, I found the fourth network hard to believe. And look what Fox has done to this country in the last three decades.
Well, and we have Newsmax growing. And Fox's response, interestingly enough, and a lot has been written on this now, and folks out there Google it over the past couple of weeks. Fox's response has not been to try to moderate and be a more legitimate news source. Rupert Murdoch and his team have decided they've got to move sharper to the right.
In the great Ailes tradition.
To be more like Newsmax. But I think there's something else at work here, Nestor. And you and I have talked about it over the past year. And it will be interesting to see how it plays out. I think early on, you know, again, when Jim Clyburn stepped up way back in early March in South Carolina and put his arm around Joe and said, Joe knows us. And that was it. The election, the Democratic nomination for presidency was basically over a couple of weeks later when Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and everyone came
together.
It's
been an incredible 13 months in that.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look back at what happened.
Given that you could bet on it in real American money and would have won a lot of money.
And people want to trivial, you know, people will poo-poo what I'm about to say. I think it's far more significant what I'm about to say then people give it credit for. And that is this. You're an animal guy, right? I don't want to oversimplify it. I think the fact that we have, and I'm going to make this bigger than just about dogs, folks. So hang in there. But the fact that there actually are a couple of dogs running around the White House again, and one of them's an old dog named Champ, and they went to the vet and they were worried about Champ, and they said, "What can we do to help Champ, you know, be happier? He's getting old. He's slowing down. The best thing you do is get him a young dog." So they get another young shelter dog. You've got the first lady, Dr. Jill Biden, who the other day comes out and puts big hearts on the White House lawn and writes thank yous to the American people. And Joe comes out in a bomber jacket and a pair of jeans and a cup of coffee. And he says to us, "Well, that's nice." And then his first ride on Marine One, Dr. Jill Biden and the president give each other a kiss goodbye like a normal married couple.
This is one thing about having this sort of old fart president who sort of sits still and knows everybody and everything in the modern world. Joe's not going to be flying off to Libya, I don't think, much. You know, certainly not. I mean, it feels to me like much like me during COVID, just being stuck in this room. And by the way, we're going to be changing the room here and changing to some lighting and some background and different stuff here in the next week. I think he's going to be locked down in the way we've been locked down. And I think things are going to be get done because there's a competence about government, and something you learn the right way and the wrong way as being a teacher and then an administrator and then going into real government, right? That it is different than running Trump Tower or whatever the hell he was doing. I'm not sure what he was doing, but there is something about DC and knowing how to manage it. And when you have the Senate, you have the House, you have the money, you could impose a lot of things right now that Joe's going to be getting a lot of work done. You know, Joe's not going to be golfing 3 days a week. We know that.
Well, I think he learned, and I want to make a point about the state and what's been happening there before we jump off, and quickly about vaccines. But I think the Biden administration learned some lessons. You know, I just finished. Anybody who hasn't read President Obama's first volume, which is amazing to me, I think I've joked, it's like War and Peace, right? It's 750 pages, and it's only volume one, but it's a great read, and he's very clear in there about the mistakes they made in being Charlie Brown and the football with Lucy, trying to get the Republicans on board, It's pretty clear to me that after the other night, if you can only get seven Republicans to look at an insurrection where, Nestor, you alluded to it, we probably glossed over it earlier in the show. Folks, if you don't think those people, had they gotten their hands on Nancy Pelosi and Mike Pence that day, that they would have killed them on national television, you're living in the land of Oz. Nancy Pelosi and Mike Pence would be dead. They would be dead today if they had gotten to them. And yet, only seven Republicans thought that was impeachable. So to waste any time,
including Mike Pence, who didn't stand up for himself, which is,
yeah, I'm not, Nestor, that is that boy, you know, whoever, whatever reporter, right? Whether it's Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes or Andrea Mitchell for NBC or Lester Holt on NBC or whoever it is, you know, whoever gets that, Anderson Cooper, you name it, go down the list. Whoever gets that interview, that's going to be fascinating because, again, I think Mike Pence, and I guess I'm no fan of Mike Pence. I disagree with almost everything that Mike Pence stands for. We had Tom Lobianco. We probably need to get Tom back on now that this has all happened, and ask Tom why Mike Pence would have stayed. Actually, I'll reach out to Tom Nestor and do that because we want to hear from him.
There seems to be some sense that he's going to get prosecuted in some other way. Everybody's always thought, well, he raped me and he got away with it. It'll be the next person. The next person will get him. That's what's been going on in this guy's life for 40 years.
I think the vice president, I think he's making a simple political calculation. And they don't know how to figure out where to be. Listen, Nikki Haley made one, and I'm no big Nikki Haley fan because I think Nikki often tries to have it both ways as well. Did she do some nice things by taking down the Confederate flag and statues? Yes, absolutely. Are there good things that Nikki Haley's done? But she's not my cup of tea. But it's interesting that she made a very political decision, I believe, recently when she said, okay, it's pretty clear to me that the I Love the Donald lane is going to be very, very crowded. We got Cruz, we got Hawley, we got Mike Lee, you may have Tom Cotton. The list is going to go on and on. The I Love Donald train is going to be very lane. It's going to be very, very crowded. And Nikki tried to throw a little space in between. So I think that's what we have to keep track of as we go forward. And that's where I think the Biden administration has been really brilliant in their strategic approach, in that they really stayed out of the impeachment. They kept their head down. They know that their relief package has overwhelming support in the American public right now. And
we talked to Bill Henry last week just about like what federal money is going to mean for everything, right? I don't know that it's going to create jobs or create stuff or that we start manufacturing. I mean, real fundamental problems like solar, and Bill Maher's been going nuts on that every week out in California, and I bring Bill Cole on, but manufacturing, making stuff and employing people, sort of basics, and infrastructure, which is something that, I've scratched my head the whole way and said infrastructure here would do a lot of mojo for the next 5 or 10 years in this country for your grandchildren, to have a better
mojo. And don't we joke all the time about no straight line? You mentioned Maher and his struggles. And like you, I watch him every week. And there is a cautionary tale there, Nestor, for Democrats. And that is, don't take stuff for granted. Don't mess things up. Make government work. As you said, one of my favorite things, hate incompetency. The fact that Bill Maher, who can afford it and is willing to abide whatever regulation California has in place, still 3 years later, can't get approval to solar heat his home.
Well, don't make me that guy on Baltimore Positive to be the guy who can't get his water bill figured out. You know what I mean? Like, this, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple.
Correct.
Don, we got to wrap things up man. But we will be together on Thursday. Everybody, some guests this week and some stuff we got coming in the pipeline here at BP.
Yeah, we've got, we've got a number of great guests coming up. Very, very exciting. This week alone, I mean, when you look down, we've got Dr. Gregory Branch from the Baltimore County Health Department. If you're a Democratic county executive and a Republican governor of the state of Maryland comes out to the Timonium Fairgrounds to say that you're doing the best job in the state, something good is happening out there. And the county has just done an incredible job with vaccination. We're going to get a health update from Dr. Branch. We're starting to take a look at the controllers race. We've got Delegate Brooke Learman coming on very soon, and the mayor of Bowie. We don't know a whole lot about Bowie, right, Nestor, other than the Bay Sox play down there, and we like that. But the mayor of Bowie, Tim Adams, is taking a look at that race, and we've got Kerry Engel coming on in the near future from Valley View Farms. Got Heather Mazur, who's going to run against Andy Harris.
We've
got Delegate John Cardin, who's fighting to make it easier to vote in Annapolis. So we've got good things coming up. We just overrode vetoes of Kerwin. We'll talk about that next week. So we're going to be here in addition to Thursdays, we're going to be here every Monday taking a look back, taking a look forward.
Well, now we get that Kerwin money, we need to be taking a look at where that money's really going to go and that it's being used the right way. Because that's part of what we do around here, right?
Nestor.
Next week, we're going to get on that.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think we need to get Cheryl Bose back on and others, because I think my Republican friends who have been beating me up pretty good over Kerwin, and we're not wavering, but I told them, hold us accountable. And I think they're right. They keep saying, how are we going to know that the money makes a difference? And by the way, I spoke to Dr. David Hornbeck, who was with us early on. He's going to come back on and update us and talk accountability as well. So a lot coming up on Baltimore Positive, Nestor.
Ah, education. Who needs that? Don Moeller is here, former Baltimore County executive. We're trying to get smarter around here. And Don and I are going to volley beginning of every week here in the not-too-distant future. So this is our first opportunity to sort of stretch out and rap with each other a little bit. I've enjoyed it. We hope you've enjoyed it as well.
On behalf of all our sponsors. Time, Nestor. It's almost time, buddy. Pitchers and catchers.
I thought it was almost time to get to the chicken and waffles over
pitchers
at State Fair. Almost time for me to
catchers,
get some añejo,
baby.
Over at El Guapo as well. Get over to Catonsville, support our sponsors, get on downtown, and take care of our friends at Fadley's. My God, those crab cakes are unbelievable. I've been waiting for that mac and cheese, and Damie said I could come in and get a dozen on the half shell now and have a proper beer right down in Lexington Market. Also coming out to Catonsville, our friends at Fadley's. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, we are WNST.net AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.